This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. Welcome back to Mental Selling, your favorite sales podcast. Today, we're back again with Mike Esterday and Derek Roberts, co-authors of the new book, Listen to Sell, How Your Mindset, Skill Set, and Human Connections Unlock Sales Performance. Today, we're going to discuss the third part of their book, which looks at the coaching conversations. The third of the three conversations that they've outlined are so essential to sales performance and sales success. Why do you think coaching is such an essential part of the ongoing learning and development process for salespeople?
Coaching is like having someone standing on the side and watching you from an angle that you can't see yourself. You can hold a mirror up, you can think about, you can see only so much. You need a vantage point that is separate from where you are, observing what you're doing, listening to what you're saying, observing the impact of the way you're engaging. And it's not possible for you to get that purely on your own. And so having somebody in your corner who cares about you and cares about the outcome and can speak to you is essential to you continuing to progress and grow as a professional. And we see that in all disciplines of professionalism, right? Continuing education is required in some spaces. That's not exactly coaching, but the idea of continuing to progress is having a coach, someone who's intimate and observant, is really critical to salespeople's success.
And so many managers don't really know how to coach. Those frontline managers are the leverage point in most organizations. They may have been successful what they did in sales, so therefore they were promoted. Necessarily mean that they're going to be a great coach. And too often they slide back into simply being a super rep. They jump in and do it themselves, or they critique people. They don't understand the difference between coaching, leadership, and management. If we had that secret video camera watching most managers, we'd find them mainly managing activities and numbers and details versus, and we define coaching as building people, seeing more in people than they see in themselves and figure out how to draw that out of people. Coaching is building a trusting relationship so people will tell you what the real deal is. What do they really want to accomplish in their job? What do they want money for? What motivates them? It's not just managing the details, but it's helping people achieve their objectives that are hopefully in alignment with the company's objectives.
Leading, managing, and coaching all have their place, and they overlap to some extent, but they're also very distinct. It leads into the next thing I wanted to ask, which is, what do you think most sales leaders, probably especially most newly promoted sales leaders, may get wrong in the assumptions that they make about coaching?
Most new managers most likely think coaching is telling people what they did wrong. So it's very tactical. Too often it's telling people versus asking them. If they ride with them, asking them, how did you feel it went? And asking them to give their opinion first versus jumping all over them. It's just a misunderstanding what coaching really is.
What you're in part alluding to is that coaching is about not necessarily giving people the answers, but it's giving them the skills and confidence to come up with answers on their own. And sometimes that also means giving them the leeway and the breathing space to falter along the way.
In the book, we talk about the three conversations, the conversation with yourself, conversation with your customer, and the conversation with your coach. What are you listening to in each of those? In the first part, where we talk about the conversation with yourself, we unpack, as Mike mentioned one time before, this idea of the congruence model. What are those things that influence what I believe about my role, what I believe about my own capabilities, the company that I represent, and so forth? And there's a certain narrative that we have to ourselves, and that influences how we show up. But that's also coachable. And so if the coach is trying to engage their producers to be more effective, you could spend some time talking about the mechanics of how they ask questions to the customer and are they offering the right solutions and they have product knowledge. That's the mechanical side of the process. But the coach also needs to talk about what's going on inside the salesperson that is enabling them or disabling them in their efforts to be successful. And so asking and probing for what is their view of selling and what's influenced that and how has that changed or what are the challenges that they see in value proposition of the products that they offer or their own abilities and the kinds of customers and the way they prioritize their activities. The coaching role digs into those areas that are internal influencers. And if you miss that, all you talk about is activity, or all you talk about is the productivity of how you organize your day, you're missing some of those things that might actually ignite better performance. That's the role of the coach. Pay attention to that.
You can coach to the skill part, the technical parts you mentioned, Derek, and get an uplift in sales. But if a manager can coach to what's really inside and help reframe what's being said in that salesperson's mind, that can be a multiplier. That can impact their achievement drive, which is the multiplier of success. I remember a story one time, we had a salesperson who was embarrassed he was in sales. He was newly married, and his in-laws were embarrassed that their daughter had married a salesperson. They wanted her to marry a doctor, a lawyer, somebody, quote, important. And so his motivation wasn't just to make sales. His motivation was to prove to his in-laws that he was a good guy. He was successful. Good manager knows how to figure out what is it that's going to really motivate that person. Why are they doing this job? If you can figure out the why, that is a multiplier.
One of the things that we focused on as we were writing this book was how do we take these concepts of what's going on in the individual and the skills that they apply? How do we sort of crack the door for the sales coach to not just see that, not just understand it, but to engage it? And so the whole last third of the book is written in such a way so that those sales coaches can have some tools. We write in their scenarios. These are the challenges. Here are some areas you may actually want to explore if you're seeing this in your sales team. And we give those kinds of tools right to the coaches to go and apply with their team. They don't have to come up with it. In fact, every chapter has a coaching corner associated with it that has these very tangible questions and areas to explore. So we've put it right in their hands to say, try this and see if it doesn't surface a different kind of conversation. See if it doesn't unlock some internal motivation that gets past barriers, that gets past preconceptions, and allows people to grow, to move into new areas of performance.
Unfortunately, a lot of sales reps don't have managers that know how to coach them well, and they'd be frustrated with that. So in the book, they can use these coaching tips, these coaching questions, as a self-coaching process for themselves. Even if you don't have the leadership or the coaching that you need, you can figure it out on your own.
Or you can use it, conversely, to self-advocate for how you'd like to be coached, how you'd those conversations to go, what ways that you would get the most out of them as well. But that's a good point. I wanted to keep going and talk about sort of the gap between what sales leaders say is important and where they're actually spending their time or not. Because I think you both remember, we did a study a few years ago around coaching, and there was a statistic, the 76% number stands out because it was interesting that in the study, 76% of the sales leaders said that they felt that coaching was critically important, but the same number, not exact same people, but the same percentage, 76%, also said that they were doing too little of it. Where do you think that gap comes from between them saying, yes, this is important, but actually where their time is being spent?
One of the most common things we heard is sales managers said, oh, I don't have time to coach.
If somebody says they don't have time to coach, let's talk about what they're really saying under the surface.
What they're really saying when they say they don't have time to coach, often is they just don't know how. They haven't been taught how. They don't understand the importance of it. Because what we do know is that study also showed that people that did coach effectively, they had about a 15% increase in sales. So if managers understand, here's how to do it and how important it is, this would actually save them time instead of costing them time.
I interviewed somebody for this podcast way back when I first started doing it. And one of the comments he made was sales leaders constantly complain about putting out fires. And he said what they've got to realize is that coaching is fire prevention. The organizations themselves, beyond and above the sales leaders and the sales teams, they have to bear some responsibility here as well for not properly preparing. As you were saying, Mike, sales leaders, they get into the role and they don't really know how to coach. They're told to go out and coach, but that's not defined for them, and they don't receive training and development on it. So their knee jerk is to go back to things like reviewing numbers and pipeline and things like that. That's a real need within organizations to make sure that when you're elevating sales managers into those roles, that you're properly equipping them.
Too often the message is drive numbers, drive business. And that's the bottom line. And obviously we've got to drive numbers and business. But one of the issues is often the senior leaders, they're not coaching the frontline managers either. So they're not modeling it. They're not modeling it, supporting it, coaching it, not teaching people how to be good coaches. It's just not going to happen. As we said, those managers are going to revert back to being a super rep or being, as our friend Michael Bungie-Stanger says, the advice monster. They want to give advice all the time instead of helping people figure out how to improve themselves.
Does coaching always have to be some sort of long, formal, sit-down conversation? Because that could be part of what ends up having it fall off people's plates, is that idea of, I don't have time because I don't have an hour to spend. It can manifest itself in other ways, can it?
There is a place for formal coaching, sit down, understand, develop, and do that with some discipline. But that doesn't require you to do that every time you coach. Great coaching first actually begins with good listening. Does the coach have their ears open to what is being said or not said by the people that they're coaching? Are they present and making calls with their team? Are they engaged in listening for opportunities to just step in and ask the right question in the right moment to create discovery? Those kind of coaching opportunities happen in the moment. They happen in the field. They happen sometimes in an unprepared fashion.
Too often managers equate coaching with an annual performance review. An annual performance review might be a surprise because you haven't been coaching all year long, and it shouldn't be a surprise. There should be regular coaching. That hour-long coaching session or writing with someone, or simply what we call a coaching moment, where you see something where you can praise them for doing something right or help them correct something that may be a mistake that they need to be aware of. A key thing in coaching, we believe, is how you see that person. Most people tend to rise to the level of belief that the manager has in him or her. There's something called the law of limited performance that we talk about, that most people rise to that level and the manager looks at the person and they only see X amount of performance. Therefore, they think that's all that they're going to get. And they put them in a box. And then that person rises to that level and they think that's all they can do. So it becomes a self-fulfilling negative prophecy. So a key thing in coaching is not just what you say, it's a belief that you exude that person can be better. They can accomplish more. They can be more. They can create more value for customers.
We also talk about coaching is a progressive activity. Mike, you articulated that. It's not a surprise at the end when you get to your annual review. It is a discipline, active. I'm engaged in coaching as a regular matter of a participation in my daily activity. And one of the greatest skills in that is the ability for the coach to listen, not to tell, but to listen. So we've emphasized listening in the book around selling. That same skill applies to coaching. And when you begin to listen without bias, listen for what's really going on in that individual. Where are the opportunities for them to grow? What do you see in them that they're not necessarily doing right now, but what do you see as potential for them to become? And you listen to what are the obstacles in the way? Maybe it's something that they continually do. Maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of, I'm not quite this, or I can't do that, or they're saying things, they're telling you things that need to be addressed in the coaching conversation. Listening is a critical skill at all levels, both internally and externally.
And Derek, as we put the book together, it's so interesting that these are coaching principles, selling principles, but they're really life skills. And what we hear from so many people who've been through our programs and have read the book, these are skills that have helped me be a better spouse, a better father, a better soccer coach, whatever it might be. Is that skill of really being customer or other person focused, listening, sincerity, authenticity. These are just great people skills, and they work really the same all around the world.
it's echoed in that point you made earlier around the coach helping somebody to see more in themselves than they might have otherwise and help them to rise to the level of your belief in them. Such an essential part, because you're right, people, they will tend to gravitate to a lower degree of success than they're probably able to achieve, but they need that coach to help pull them up.
It's not just the coach, but you have to have someone who is coachable, a willingness to hear, has the emotional intelligence to say, okay, there is an area for me to grow into or expand into, and I'm willing to take that kind of feedback, digest it, internalize it, and then act on it. That's a muscle that needs to be developed and strengthened as well. Emotional intelligence isn't something that just necessarily happens. You need to build stronger habits of emotional intelligence strength. So coaches can help with that. The individual producer needs to be aware of that and choose to be coachable. And when they are, then that accelerates their growth as well.
There are probably some people out there that are truly not coachable, but you're right. If somebody has effective coaching skills and the mindset and skill set around it, they can pull a lot more people forward in that than they might think.
That doesn't mean that they're rightly suited for sales. That they may be coachable to something else. But to say that someone is inherently uncoachable at least doesn't resonate with me, because that says there's not a value to them. They're not worth investing in some form or fashion. They're just a discard. They're not coachable. Toss them off. I would philosophically disagree with that.
That reminds me of something I've heard before from one of our other consultants here who's talked about the same idea around training, quote unquote, just your high performers. That are you pigeonholing that your training should just be for the high performers? And I've seen him in front of a room say, I wonder if everybody else realizes that you've given up on them. Because isn't there training and development opportunities? And conversely, aren't there coaching opportunities for everybody to help move the needle for everybody?
And the inverse of that, some companies only want to train the folks that are failing to try to get them to survive, but then they forget about the top performers and all of a sudden they leave.
And you've said that, Derek. I've heard you say before that a lot of times your coaching and your training should focus on your high performers first. But to Mike's point, it's not an either-or scenario.
Not to the exclusion of everyone else on the team. Just don't forget your high performers, because they often do get overlooked. You just leave them alone, they're just going to do the job. But that puts them at risk, because they say, why is everybody else getting attention and I don't? Or if I could move the needle on a high performer even 5 or 10%, the magnitude of impact is greater than probably rising up that bottom 10% of my producers. So maybe I'll lose a little bit of the bottom, but it doesn't mean that I coach to the exclusion of any group involved. And coaching is not always advancing in that role. Sometimes you coach up. Other times you may coach out. My dad has a saying, everyone deserves an opportunity to be successful. Some deserve an opportunity to be successful somewhere else. They're not always a fit for this particular role. And so as a coach, we engage them to bring understanding to that. And then eventually, maybe they do decide that they belong in a different kind of role. That's more efficient than having them fail and flounder in the role over time, waste opportunities. Let's engage quickly. Let's coach that, understand it, and move them or out.
And Derek, you talk about who should be coached. Too often it's a misunderstanding of coaching, and I'm really coaching the people that are struggling. I'm trying to help them survive, but everybody should be coached. If you think about sports figures, anybody that's a high performer, most of them have coaches. Because if they could just get better a little bit, it can be a huge difference in their results.
In that example, the best of the best athletes, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady's up the world, they got more coaching as their career progressed, not less. It might have looked different, but they were still getting it.
We've asked the question often in groups, what percent of your sales team members are on plateaus? And the plateau may be a high plateau, not just a low or an average plateau. The typical question gets a response of 80, 90% of our people are on some type of plateau. It means they're making $1 million a year, but they're still on a plateau. How can we coach them to go up to the next notch?
Lastly, one of the other things around coaching that emerges is that the behaviors and the values that the leaders model, or they should end up being, right, what the salesperson is then modeling with customers, the ability to listen, the ability to give honest feedback, to ask good questions, all those sorts of things. If the leaders are modeling those things through coaching for their salespeople, then in turn, the salespeople are more likely at least, to model those with customers, aren't they?
That's where we talk about the culture. When you do that, we're really creating a customer-focused sales and coaching culture across the organization.
I just had this conversation yesterday with a sales leader who was trying to work their team into some new behaviors and some new markets. And one of the things that we talked about was that leader modeling this idea of, as questions come up from their team about, I'm concerned about this market, or I'm concerned about this, or that leader's role is to explore that with more questions instead of just giving answers. It lean in. Tell me what you're concerned about. What's the motivation behind this? What are you really trying to solve for? That's the practice of asking questions to get buy-in that ultimately then gets them to buy the solution or whatever they're moving to. That's the leader modeling it. You can't expect the external experience to be any different than the internal experience. If you don't possess this kind of experience between your team, you can't expect your team to go out and do it with your customer.
That buy-in, as we've talked about, whether it's the salesperson with the customer or it's the salesperson, that buy-in best happens when there's a degree of self-realization, when you're helping people come to that conclusion themselves versus just pushing the idea on them. And I think that's what you're talking about.
And that's the discovery that happens when we ask the right question and they come to the solution rather than us giving the right answer, because that answer is our answer. It's not theirs. They haven't owned it until they discover.
Mike and Derek, thank you so much again. I've really appreciated your time in doing this mini series of episodes with us around your new book, Listen to Sell. So thanks again for your time. This has been really insightful.
Thank you, Will.
For listeners, for more about the book, you can get a free preview and related content by visiting listentosellbook.com. You'll also find Listen to Sell on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, on bookshop.org, or wherever your books are sold. You can also connect with and follow Mike Yesterday and Derek Roberts on LinkedIn, where they post frequently about a lot of the things that we've been discussing in these episodes. Thanks very much for joining us, as always. If you've missed any portions of this series with Mike and Derek, please feel free to scroll back and listen to those as well. We hope you've gotten a lot out of this and appreciate, as always, your time joining us from wherever and whenever you might be listening.
You can find Listen to Sell, How Your Mindset, Skill Set, and Human Connections Unlock Sales Performance on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, or anywhere where you get your books. Visit listentosellbook.com, where you can also download a free preview of the book, get other related content from Mike and Derek, hear what other industry experts have had to say, and inquire about both speaking opportunities and bulk sales orders. Thanks for being with us today. Look forward to having you with us again soon.
Thank you for listening, and I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed, and as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.